You're naked,
confided the madman in a cracked voice.
I'm naked, too.
I see that.
The madman looked at him, then he nodded and twisted his head down and around as if he were trying to remove a crick from his neck. Eventually, he said,
Do you know me?
No.
I know you. I watched you in Cairo. I watched you after. My sister likes you.
You are...
The name escaped him.
Eats roadkill. Yes. You are Horace.
The madman nodded.
Horace, I am the falcon of the morning, the hawk of the afternoon. I am the sun, as you are the sun. And I know the true name of Ra. My mother told me.
That's great.
The madman stared at the ground below them intently, saying nothing. Then he dropped from the tree. A hawk fell like a stone to the ground, pulled out of its plummet into a swoop, beat its wings heavily and flew back to the tree, a baby rabbit in its talons. It landed on a branch closer to Shadow.
Are you hungry?
No. I guess I should be, but I'm not.
I'm hungry.
He ate the rabbit rapidly, pulling it apart, sucking, tearing, rending. As he finished with them, he dropped the gnawed bones and the fur to the ground. He walked further down the branch until he was only an arm's length from Shadow. Then he peered at Shadow unselfconsciously, inspecting him with care and caution from his feet to his head. There was rabbit blood on the man's chin and his chest, and he wiped it off with the back of his hand. Shadow felt he had to say something.
Hey.
Hey!
He stood up on the branch, turned away from Shadow, and let a stream of dark urine arc out into the meadow below. It went on for a long time. When he had finished, he crouched down again on the branch.
What do they call you?
Shadow.
You are the shadow. I am the light. Everything that is casts a shadow. They will fight soon. I was watching them as they started to arrive. I was high in the sky and none of them saw me, although some of them have keen eyes. You are dying, aren't you?
But Shadow could no longer speak. Everything was far away. A hawk took wing and circled slowly upward, riding the updrafts into the morning. Moonlight. A cough shook Shadow's frame, a racking, painful cough that stabbed his chest and his throat. He gagged for breath.
Hey, puppy.
He looked down. The moonlight burned whitely through the branches of the tree, bright as day, and there was a woman standing in the moonlight on the ground below him, her face a pale oval. The wind rattled in the branches of the tree.
Hi, puppy.
He tried to speak, but he coughed instead, deep in his chest, for a long time.
You know, that doesn't sound good.
Hello, Laura.
She looked up at him with dead eyes, and she smiled.
How did you find me?
She was silent for a while in the moonlight. Then she said,
You are the nearest thing I have to life. You are the only thing I have left. The only thing that isn't bleak and flat and gray. I could be blindfolded and dropped into the deepest ocean, and I would know where to find you. I could be buried 100 miles underground, and I would know where you are.
He looked down at the woman in the moonlight, and his eyes stung with tears.
I'll cut you down. I spend too much time rescuing you, don't I?
No. Leave me. I have to do this.
She looked up at him and shook her head.
You're crazy. You're dying up there, or you'll be crippled if you aren't already.
Maybe, but I'm alive.
Yes, I guess you are.
You told me. In the graveyard.
It seems like such a long time ago, puppy. I feel better here. It doesn't hurt as much, you know what I mean? But I'm so dry.
The wind let up and he could smell her now. A stink of rotten meat and sickness and decay. Pervasive and unpleasant.
I lost my job. It was a night job, but they said people had complained. I told them I was sick, and they said they didn't care. I'm so thirsty.
The women. They have water. The house.
Poppy.
Tell them. Tell them I said to give you water.
I should go.
Then she hacked and made a face, spat a mass of something white onto the grass. It broke up when it hit the ground and wriggled away. It was almost impossible to breathe. His chest felt heavy and his head was swaying.
Stay. Please. Don't go.
He started to cough.
Stay the night.
I'll stop a while.
She said. And then, like a mother to a child, she said,
Nothing's gonna hurt you when I'm here. You know that.
Shadow coughed once more. He closed his eyes, only for a moment, he thought, but when he opened them again, the moon had set, and he was alone. A crashing and a pounding in his head, beyond the pain of migraine, beyond all pain. Everything dissolved into tiny butterflies which circled him like a multicolored dust storm and then evaporated into the night. The white sheet wrapped about the body at the base of the tree flapped noisily in the morning wind. The pounding eased. Everything slowed. There was nothing left to make him keep breathing. His heart ceased to beat in his chest. The darkness that he entered this time was deep and lit by a single star, and it was final. Chapter 16. I know it's crooked, but it's the only game in town. Canada Bill Jones. The tree was gone, and the world was gone, and the morning gray sky above him was gone. The sky was now the color of midnight. There was a single cold star shining high above him, a blazing, twinkling light, and nothing else. He took a single step and almost tripped. Shadow looked down. There were steps cut into the rock going down, steps so huge that he could only imagine that giants had cut them and descended them a long time ago. He clambered downward, half jumping, half vaulting from step to step. His body ached, but it was the ache of lack of use, not the tortured ache of a body that has hung on a tree until it was dead. He observed, without surprise, that he was now fully dressed in jeans and a white t-shirt. He was barefoot. He experienced a profound moment of déjà vu. This was what he had been wearing when he stood in Chernobog's apartment the night when Zorya Polunichnaya had come to him and told him about the constellation called Odin's Wain. She had taken the moon down from the sky for him. He knew, suddenly, what would happen next. Zorya Polunichnaya would be there. She was waiting for him at the bottom of the steps. There was no moon in the sky, but she was bathed in moonlight nonetheless. Her white hair was moon pale, and she wore the same lace and linen nightdress she had worn that night in Chicago. She smiled when she saw him and looked down as if momentarily embarrassed.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I don't know. I think maybe this is another strange dream on the tree. I've been having crazy dreams since I got out of prison.
Her face was silvered by the moonlight, but no moon hung in that plum-black sky. And now, at the foot of the steps, even the single star was lost to view, and she looked both solemn and vulnerable. She said,
All your questions can be answered if that is what you want. But once you learn your answers, you can never unlearn them. You have to understand that.
I got it,
he said. Beyond her, the path forked. He would have to decide which path to take, he knew that. But there was one thing he had to do first. He reached into the pocket of his jeans and was relieved when he felt the familiar weight of the coin at the bottom of the pocket. He eased it out, held it between finger and thumb, a 1922 Liberty dollar.
This is yours.
He remembered then that his clothes were really at the foot of the tree. The women had placed his clothes in the canvas sack from which they had taken the ropes and tied the end of the sack, and the biggest of the women had placed a heavy rock on it to stop it from blowing away. And so he knew that, in reality, the Liberty dollar was in a pocket in that sack beneath the rock. But still it was heavy in his hand at the entrance to the underworld. She took it from his palm with her slim fingers.
Thank you. It bought you your liberty twice. And now, it will light your way into dark places.
She closed her hand around the dollar, then she reached up and placed it in the air as high as she could reach. She let go of it. Shadow knew then that this was another dream, for instead of falling, the coin floated upward until it was a foot or so above Shadow's head. It was no longer a silver coin, though. Lady Liberty and her crown of spikes were gone. The face he saw on the coin was the indeterminate face of the moon in the summer sky, the face that was only visible until you stared at it, whereupon it would become dark seas and shapes on the moon's cratered surface. The pattern and the face replaced by shadows of pure randomness and chance.